I am beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can bring me down, so don't you bring me down today.
I'm impressed that you can do that every week and go through with it while I'm dying laughing. You don't even skip a beat. Like,
I'm a performer. I'm a professional. The show must go on, whether or not my audience is unruly or not. I must go on. Hi, guys. Welcome back to 20-somethings podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Amanda.
And you have a huge dust bunny on your shoulder. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Ew.
Darla's sorry. Also here. Just she's super hyper. So if you hear her little nails click clacking along the floor or hear her growling, just embrace it. Hopefully she crashes soon. We wanted to just quickly thank you guys for your positive feedback on last week's episode. We were super nervous to release that. I don't know why we were so nervous. It's not like we said anything that crazy, but like we talked about in the episode, this is just a really weird climate to say anything that's not exactly what your friends are saying, especially on social media. But we received a lot of really positive DMs and messages and reviews. So that encouraged us to keep talking about difficult subjects, even if it makes us uncomfortable, because somebody's got to talk about this stuff and we're down to do it in a lighthearted and relatable way.
And our friend Cece, thanks Cece, just let us know that this week is actually eating disorder week. So we felt like we might as well just continue with what's going on, just staying relevant.
It's not political by any means, but it's still kind of a difficult, heavy, potentially triggering subject. So it's Eating Disorders Awareness Week. And I know I've touched briefly on my eating disorder. Very vaguely, I've talked about it on the podcast. But I guess we're going to dive into it a little bit deeper today. And I know Amanda has a little bit of her own history and experience. And as we try to do every week, we're going to try to keep it relatively lighthearted and fun. I'm not going to have any emotional breakdowns. I'm just too happy podcasting. I don't think it'd be possible for me to have a breakdown on the podcast. But yeah, if this is too much for you, like this is just a trigger warning now. If you are really susceptible to really negative feelings right now, then maybe don't listen to this. But I do think hopefully this will be helpful. That's our goal, is to be positive and helpful and to not trigger anyone. But I can't speak for anyone's experience and what may or may not trigger them. So if this isn't for you this week, then just leave us a 5-star review and carry on to another episode. Okay, love you.
And if you've struggled yourself with an eating disorder, just know you're not alone. Sarah and I are both very grateful to have each other to talk openly about struggles we've both had and a lot of our friends have had. And because of this, it's clear to us how it's such a huge thing, mm-hmm. at least in the Western part of the world. I think almost most of our friends, honestly say, yeah, have experienced it, whether they are honest about it or not.
Right.
So do you want to go first or me?
I guess I'll probably jump in 12 times. So why not? So why not start? It's so weird talking about this.
Yeah, maybe I'll like prompt you.
Okay, sure.
When do you think you started experiencing disordered eating, or what maybe led you to it?
I was, as I think I mentioned this in like the high school episode potentially, I was always super confident probably until I was like 16 or 17. And I certainly wasn't a perfect girl. Like I always was more like big boned and muscular and had small boobs and this and that. But I just didn't care. Like I truly thought I was God's gift to earth. And then I did talk about, I think it was that high school episode, I talked about that very triggering experience where the lady in the dance exam told me to lose weight in front of everybody. And that certainly was a moment of complete disillusionment from my own body where I thought, oh, I thought I looked okay, but apparently I don't. and you just sort of become completely disenchanted with yourself, and you start to, yeah, I guess reevaluate what you look like and what other people perceive you to look like. But I would say probably not until second or third year of university did I actually start to develop what could be classified as disordered habits and disordered eating. I started actually doing a Weight Watchers program when I was in second year, and it worked. I lost probably 18 pounds pretty steadily and pretty happily. I just basically started to pay more attention to what was good, like quote unquote good food and bad, quote unquote bad food. Even that could be triggering for people. So I'm going to do my best not to trigger people, but everyone has different things. But yeah, like, you know, let's say something I was eating my whole life that I just assumed was healthy. When you actually have some sort of program that makes you stop and think, of course you realize, oh God, that's not healthy at all. And then you just, it was educational for sure. But losing weight was addictive for me. Like, I felt so empowered with each pound that I lost that I just wanted to lose more and more. And it was just never enough. And my initial goal was like 12 pounds, and then it became 15 pounds, and then it became 20 pounds. And I think overall, the most I ever lost was like 25 pounds maybe, but it was a big difference noticeably for sure. And people started commenting, which was also like crack for me. Honestly, it was so exhilarating when people would say, girl, like, look how thin you look, or girl, like, damn, you look good, or whatever. And I wasn't getting these type of compliments before. And it's not like anyone was saying anything negative about my body, but people certainly weren't glorifying it. So that became very addictive for me too. And even when people would say stuff like, girl, you're looking really thin, are you okay? More concerning messages, I would even find that very flattering, even though they were not necessarily complimenting me, but in my head, I would take that as a compliment because I would think, okay, they're seeing what I'm seeing. Like, this is working. So it started with a diet, and then it quickly turned into a spiral situation where I was restricting what I was eating and then developed into bulimia. So that's kind of more what I struggle with in the later part of my 20s is bulimia. I like never really admitted that out loud, but I'm doing better. I think I've gone like 3 months or something now without an episode, I guess you could say, which for me is really good, and I'm really proud of myself. And I have moments when I feel, usually it's when I feel emotionally stressed or triggered that I want to act out in some way physically, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that, but I'm getting stronger and I'm getting more resilient and I'm able to fight that urge, which is all you can really ask for, is to just make progress, right? Like, we're not going to be perfect overnight. But yeah, that was what I started to mess around with, I suppose, probably in like fourth year of university. And that kind of became my new disordered eating habit. And then it kind of just continued on and off throughout living overseas and stuff. But I would always just blame it on being drunk, right? Like, I'd throw up all the time when I was drinking, and sometimes it was forced. And I would just be like, oh, like, I just had to pull trigger because it makes me feel better the next day, or because I drank too much. And I was just making excuses for myself, really. Like, but no one was over there to keep an eye on me or call me out on it. So anyway, and then when I moved home and I became super isolated with COVID, that's when it got really bad. And I know I talked to my doctor and I've been seeking help for it and I've been doing all the right things. But my doctor actually said that eating disorders skyrocketed during COVID, which makes total sense to me because everybody's patterns of living and their outlets and whatever were completely thrown out of into disarray. So maybe their gym was their safe place or whatever it is. Like, they can't shop at the normal places they shop at. And so people felt out of control of their lives. And when people feel out of control in their lives or emotionally, they usually start to crack down physically in some way. So that was actually kind of a reassuring. I mean, it's terrible that that's the case, but in some ways I felt like, okay, at least I'm not alone in this. At least there's some statistical data to show that I'm not insane for having this reaction to what's going on. So COVID was hard, and but moving to BC honestly has been extremely healing, and getting a dog has been healing, and just making positive changes in my life, including this podcast, has built up other aspects of my life that give me just as much fulfillment and purpose and confidence than just my physical appearance. Like, I'm proud of my job. I'm proud of my podcast. I'm proud of my relationship. I have a dog to look out for. I have things to do, places to go, people to see. And I think, you know, my body and how I look, it's still important to me, but it's not my whole life. And I think in my really early 20s, that was how I was getting like 80% of my validation and self-worth, was how skinny I looked or how much I could pull off an outfit or how much a guy said he liked my body. So just time and maturity, I guess, has helped me grow out of it a little bit. But it's always going to be something I struggle with, and I know that. But I guess it's just a matter of learning to live with it and learning to hopefully one day overcome it. But for now, I'm just proud of the progress I've made. And that's my little story.
You should be proud. Yeah. That's amazing. And thanks for sharing that, Sarah. I know that's not easy to talk about at all, but I think there's a lot of people out there who can relate and really appreciate mm-hmm. your honesty. For anyone who's struggling with bulimia, would you have a word of advice? I know you gave some just explaining on how you've been healing and mm-hmm. just your state of mind right now in BC, how busy you are with fulfilling things. That really helps, but anything else?
Well, obviously, seek help, whether that be some sort of therapy. I actually spoke to my doctor, and then I was referred to a psychiatrist, and I actually changed my anxiety medication, which was actually very helpful for me, because my anxiety medication now actually does help with eating disorders specifically. So those are some traditional medicinal things you can do. But of course, there's also meditations. You can have certain mantras, maybe have something. Like for me, honestly, I talk to my boyfriend, which I'm super blessed that I have a safe space with my boyfriend. I'll literally go up to him and just be like, I really feel like I'm about to do this. Can we go on a walk, or can we go play a game? And he's like, yep, let's go. And he just distracts me, and he's got my back. And I'm very privileged and blessed to have that. And I can't thank him enough for how much he's helped me. But there's lots of people who don't have that person who lives with them, or that person that they feel like they can talk to. So I guess just try to talk to yourself. Maybe just look at yourself in the mirror and give yourself a little pep talk and just say, like, I don't know. I mean, it's different for everyone, but just like, I don't want to hurt my body. I love my body. My body does so much for me. It helps me walk. It helps me get to work in the morning. It helps me, you know, fall asleep at night. And my body's trying to keep me alive. My body's trying to protect me, and I'm harming it. Or maybe that's not going to work for you. Maybe you got to open the book, or maybe you need to just do 10 minutes of exercise and that'll take the edge off, or whatever it is. Everybody has to find their own groove, but it literally, it's like the same as an addiction, to be honest. It's just like you have to have that thick skin. You have to have that tough love with yourself. And you're going to fail, and you're going to fail, and you're going to fail. And then eventually you're going to start to make progress, and you're not going to want to lose that progress. And that's kind of where I'm at now. So, yeah, I don't know if that's helpful or not, but I see you and I love you. And just look out for your, like, you don't want to hurt your body. Your body loves you, right? You gotta be kind to your home.
It is our home. I love that. And yeah, I think everyone has to remember that it's the only home we're going to have forever. So let's treat it like we want it to stay around forever.
So when Amanda's also been a great resource for me to talk about my eating stuff. I'm not as open with her as I am Carlos, but that's okay. Like, I don't want to trauma dump on everybody. But Amanda, I know, used to have, I think it was in university, I remember her telling me that she was having some weird eating stuff, and she went to go seek help for it as well. And now you tell me that you can say with like 100% confidence that you have recovered from it. So do you want to talk us a little bit through what that process looked for you and what your words of advice would be? Because that's my goal one day, is to be able to like say that I have 100% recovered from disordered eating.
Yeah, definitely. It's a long journey, no doubt about that. And I'm so grateful to be at a place where I can truthfully say that. Yeah, I suffered from an eating disorder, and I agree, it absolutely falls in the category of an addiction. And similar to any addiction, whether that's alcoholism or drugs or you name it, people can recover and live an amazing life after that. But yeah, I did mention in another episode, depending on if everyone's listening.
That Amanda.
Yeah. I'll try to do a recap without repeating myself too much. Before I get into that, though, I just want to say that the term eating disorder, it is extremely broad. Mm-hmm. It goes anywhere from the more extremes, which is anorexia and bulimia, to often if you have like an exercise addiction, that is still in that large spectrum of eating disorder.
Or if you're an overeater or like a comfort eater, there's like lots of, mm-hmm. It's not just you starve yourself or you restrict. It could also be you binge eat food or you overeat. That can also be classified as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with that, I think I did fall in the category or the side of the spectrum that was less extreme, mm-hmm. which I am grateful for. And I think that is what has led me to have a recovery, maybe. But so pretty much it started, I was just always smaller and small framed all my life growing up. And then out of nowhere, after first year of university where everyone's partying and drinking, and then I joined the military, was gone for a whole summer and just eating very unhealthy food, I gained about 30, 35 pounds, something like that in one summer. And then that just started the whole journey I've had with an eating disorder. But it wasn't until later that I recovered that it wasn't so much that I had disordered eating, because yes, I would do things like restrict heavily and that would lead to binge eating episodes, but not in so much of an extreme way that I would then make myself throw up, stuff like that. So I think because my eating patterns weren't very extreme, I think I struggled more with just disordered thinking. Mm-hmm. So by that, I mean, I lost my 30 pounds. And while I was losing my 30 pounds, I think a lot of people at the time thought I had an eating disorder. And honestly, yes and no. You can't, if someone wants to lose 30 pounds, that takes a lot of work and a lot of effort, and you do have to be restrictive. So someone who's on a diet, that doesn't necessarily mean they have an eating disorder. Sometimes they just are really like kicking their butt into high gear to reach their goal. So that's one thing, but of course that can then lead to eating issues. So that's what happened to me. I lost my weight, and I do think I did that in a healthy way, which just involved working out and eating relatively healthy. Like I ate a shit ton of salads with a lean protein and would have like, would have like the healthiest green smoothies you could ever imagine for breakfast. But then after I lost my weight, so that addiction, as you mentioned, it just stayed there, but it was just it twisted weirdly into like an obsession or a fear, I guess, of putting the weight back on.
Oh, yeah.
So again, lost the weight. That's great. Life is good. But then I was still like eating, I guess, as if just life or my body wasn't the way I wanted it to be. Like, so when I was openly telling people, like, if we were going to a restaurant and they're like, oh, Amanda, why are you getting a salad? It would be like, oh, well, I'm like, I gained 30 pounds and I'm trying to lose it. And they'd be like, oh, good for you. That's great. But then after losing the weight, and like continuing all that restrictive eating, it just like spiraled out of control to where, I guess I was just more restrictive than I needed to be, which then would lead to like a full-blown day episode of like eating unhealthy. And it's like it would start with like an unhealthy breakfast. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, well, I ruined the whole day of not being already by not being healthy. So I might as well not eat healthy the whole day. And then it just, you feel bad about yourself. And then for some reason in your mind, you just feel like you ruined your whole weight loss progress, which, again, so maybe I wasn't doing the most extreme things with my eating and with my body, but just my mind was in a very dangerous place of just being so worried to gain a single pound back, where it's like, you don't need to worry about that much. But at the time, it's hard to think clearly and see clearly.
Can I jump in for a sec? First of all, thank you for sharing. If we're sounding a little shaky or quiet or nervous, I mean, I know I'm never quiet. It's physically impossible for me to be quiet, but we are kind of nervous. I can just, the aura in the room is very different from how it normally is when we podcast, but that's not a bad thing. This is going to be very healing and therapeutic, but just so you know, like, we are a little vulnerable talking about this. So if you can detect that in our voices, that's why. But that is the thing with an eating disorder, is it is very much a mental health disorder. For most people, it's way more mental than it is physical. I mean, obviously you can see sometimes the results of drastic change physically, but that is one misconception that's very dangerous, is when people think, oh, well, that person's overweight, so there's no way they have an eating disorder. Or that person's very thin, so obviously they're anorexic. There's been times in my life when I am arguably a bit heavier, and everybody around me is like, you look so healthy, you look so curvy, you look great. And I'm like, haha, thanks. But like, I hate my body, even though everybody else thinks it looks better. So it's just, you can't, it's a mental, traumatic, horrible disease that I would not wish on anybody, because it's just really hard to second guess, overthink, calculate every single thing you want to eat or you have eaten and try to balance. At least for me, it was like I'd have to counteract it with working out, or I'd have to eat really, really healthy the next day. And so much of that, I think, comes from just culture. Everybody's lifestyle is different, but I grew up in a competitive dance environment, and it is documented that like modeling, dancing, cheerleading, things like that, where you're showing your body, and honestly, you are judged for your body to an extent, and you're wearing skimpy outfits and you're being lifted up. Naturally, those type of sports are going to fuel eating disorders, and eating disorders are more common amongst women, although, of course, men do have eating disorders. So these female-dominated sports where every girl's wearing the same outfit, and of course you want to look the best in that outfit, that's kind of like human nature. Of course it's going to breed sort of toxic body dysmorphia. And thankfully, I think people have come a long way with just being more sensitive and not saying horrible things like, you shouldn't wear that, darling, like your cellulite's falling out. Like, those were kind of the things I was told. And imagine what people 30 years ago were told when they were, you know, trying to be on Broadway or trying. You hear stories of what, like, Judy Garland or Marilyn Monroe, like the things men used to say to them. And it's just horrific. So obviously we've come a long way, but everybody is responsible for their own healing and for their own triggers, and you can't like trauma dump on other people. And I've made this mistake before where I'm like, I can't believe that person just said that. That totally triggered me, and I'm so mad at them. And how could they say? And it's like, they probably were just you can't expect people to know what all your triggers are and what all your sensitivities are. It's kind of up to you to either voice that to someone and to just be like, hey, by the way, when you say this, I know you don't mean any harm by it, but it just kind of puts me in a bad place, so could you try not to say that? Or just kind of like remove yourself and try to work through it on your own, because it is one of those things where it's not always apparent to somebody else that you're struggling with this or that you're having a bad day. So I've had a lot of relationships very tormented by my eating disorder because I expect them to read my mind. But one piece of advice I will give, just in terms of, in general, don't say this to women specifically. Amanda and I always joke about this, but Dad, I love you so much. You're the best dad in the world, but I am going to kind of call you out for 1 second. My dad growing up used to always tease me about how much I would eat. And he would do it in like a proud, loving dad way. Like, damn, Sarah, you're having another bowl of pasta. Like, you're my big eater. You're my big girl or whatever. And this is what I'm saying. Of course, he's going to have no idea that I'm sitting there thinking, oh, fuck, I guess I should go throw up the second bowl of pasta because apparently I'm his big girl. And like, I don't want to be a big girl. I want to be Kendall Jenner. Like, I don't want to be big, which is a whole other thing I want to talk about. Or Nick. Love you, Nick, but I'm calling you out as well. Like doing his little jingle when he goes, there goes Sarah. Sarah loves food. Yum, yum, yum. And then I'm thinking, okay, people are watching what I'm eating. People are judging what I'm eating. And so just stuff like that in general, maybe don't do that to people, but we've all learned our lesson and we've all moved on. But with that being said, sometimes people are not meaning to offend you or they're not meaning to trigger you. And just voice, I know it's hard, but just voice it to people if you can. And if you're not capable, then just try to remove your own trauma from them, because it's not fair to lash out at people all the time if they can't fully understand what's going on in your head, because eating disorders are extremely, extremely complex and individualized from one person to the next. And one last thing I'll say, and I'll pass it off to Amanda, is just, we talked about this on the social media episode, but just be we're like plugging so many other episodes in this episode. It's so great. True. But just be cautious who you're following on social media, what content you're following. I am not built like Kendall Jenner. I've always wanted to be. I want to be that, like, not so much anymore, but for a time when I was really, really, really thin, I wanted to look like heroin chic or whatever the hell that, like, the 90s model chic. Like, I didn't care. I wanted my collarbones to pop out. Like, I wanted my ribs to pop out. I really had to go through and be like, holy crap, 90% of the people I'm following are, like, thin, white, pretty girls. Like, this is tragic. Like, where is the diversity? Where is the representation? So I've really particularly crafted my social media feed over the last few years to be, like, bodies that look like mine, or people's whose struggles with the same thing I struggle with, or people who have, like, different, you know, different races, different ethnicities, different stories, people who I admire their writing or I admire their recovery stories. So just maybe I'm going to preach this in every episode, but go through your social media following and just try to notice maybe any toxic patterns. And see if you can mix it up a bit and make your social media as much of a safe place for yourself as you can. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. I know for myself, a lot of people, while I was just in the middle of healing from an eating disorder and with close friends, I was open about the fact that I actually did go to an eating disorder clinic to get professional advice, which was really helpful and free. So I really do recommend that. And it's scary. There's walking into a hospital and asking the front desk, hi, where's the eating disorder clinic? Like, that's awkward as hell. That's so uncomfortable. And cherry on top, at the eating disorder clinic, I saw someone from high school. And but we made a joke about it, and it was actually wonderful. And I was like, oh, like, you're at eating disorder boot camp too. And so we just laughed and it was all good. But so truly, like, my worst fear actually happened. I saw someone I knew at the eating disorder clinic and it was fine.
But that just goes to show you how prevalent it is. Like, I think it's like 1 in 4 people have some sort of disordered eating.
or something
like that. I'm sure more.
Yeah.
For women, especially in today's time. But when I was struggling, it didn't matter what advice I was given, even if it was the greatest advice in the world. I was not ready to hear it or listen until I started actually properly recovering. Mm-hmm. And so I do want to give advice, but I know at the same time, this advice was given to me and I didn't listen at all because I wasn't in the right state of mind. But I'll still give that advice just for funsies. For me, what really, really helped, because so my specific disordered eating issue was I'd be crazy restrictive, so I would label so many foods as bad foods.
Yeah.
Bread, the list goes on, cheese, like dairy. So essentially, if it wasn't a fruit or vegetable or lean protein, it in my mind was a bad food that I would be really upset with myself for eating. So that was my issue. And so a lot of the advice from people I really trust and respect would be like, you can eat those quote unquote, they're not even bad, but they're like, you can eat those things, but just do it in moderation. And my response was, I can't do it in moderation because the second I have a little bit of it, I'm going to go crazy and binge on that all day. But that's because I was so restricted and my brain was starving. Even if I had, so that's another thing. I would eat enough calories in the day. I wasn't starving myself. I was just so insanely restrictive that my brain was starving, even if my body wasn't. So again, at the time, I couldn't just have a small piece of cheese because I was so deprived that it would just trigger me and make me want to eat it nonstop because, again, my brain was like crying for something that was not a fruit or vegetable. But now that I have very healthy eating and healthy habits and a healthy mind and life, I'm able to eat all the things that I want, whether it's sweets or chips or bread, you name it. And I can do it in moderation because I know it's not the last time I'm going to have that piece of bread for who knows when.
Yeah.
So again, I wasn't able to take that advice when I was struggling. And what works for me doesn't necessarily work for everyone. Like you said, Sarah, eating disorders are so complex. But the greatest thing you could do is seek help. And if it is too hard to go to a hospital or the hospitals near you don't have eating disorder clinics, I'm certain there's things you can find, like a telephone line. We could even put it in like show notes.
Yeah, we will. We'll try to find some resources and put them in the show notes. Also, like if you're in high school, maybe talk to your guidance counselor, talk to a teacher you trust. You could even, I mean, this could get potentially sketchy, but there's so many social media pages that are like verified, that have statistics and have help. There's probably a lot of YouTube videos of people sharing their stories. Like, we do live in a world of an abundance of knowledge and resources and information. The only reason I'm skeptical to say that is because obviously maybe not all these people are medical doctors, but sometimes all you need to hear is like, you're not alone. And I've always felt like such a hypocrite because I've been teaching young girls dance for the past 8 years while secretly hiding a very prevalent eating disorder. And, you know, some of them I potentially worried, oh, what if I, you know, you see maybe some signs in some of these young dancers and I'd think, oh, Jesus, like, I wonder if they're struggling with it. And, but I just felt like I would preach to these kids, like, girls, own it, like, own your body. You're beautiful, la la la, but then I secretly was really struggling behind closed doors. So, but if someone ever, with that being said, I was their teacher and I was looking out for them. So if any of them ever did come up to me and expressed that they needed help, of course, I would be more than happy to help. So, and honestly, I would be extremely empathetic because I know, and there's going to be so many women in your life or men who are going to hear where you're coming from, relate to it in some way, empathize with you. This is unfortunately still such a stigmatized subject. And I think the most powerful thing I did for myself was remove the stigma from myself. Like, and I've done that with my anxiety too. And I think that's why I'm such an open book. And it really does throw people sometimes, because I'm just like, I don't act as if it's something I should be ashamed of or something I should be embarrassed by. I felt that way for many years, but now I'm just owning it as part of my story, as part of my identity, as part of my healing journey. And I'm not ashamed of it, because there's literally millions of people out there in the world who experience the same thing. And a lot of the times it is, at least for my anxiety, it is a issue with the chemical levels in your brain. It's a scientific issue. It is a disorder, and it's not normal, and it is painful, and it's horrible. And there are ways to treat it, and there are ways to feel better. And that is not on you. Like, you have no reason to be ashamed or embarrassed. And if anything, you should give yourself a pat on the back for getting up every day and living your life and trying to get from one day to the next. But you don't have to struggle in silence, and you don't have to feel ashamed. It just takes time, and it just takes, I guess, finding a bit of self-love. You can order the book on Amazon if you want, that I ordered last week. I'll put it in the show notes. But I don't know if that made any sense. I feel like I'm just starting to ramble now. But remove the stigma from yourself and just try to be a little more honest with yourself. The first step is removing the denial, right? And that's the same with anything, like with alcoholism, with any sort of thing. The first step is just acceptance and coming through that denial stage and just being like, okay, like Amanda did, I think I have an issue. What's the next step? And once you get past that, like, that's honestly the hardest part, is just coming to terms with potentially something that's not right.
And don't give up. I know I'm saying right now that I have healed from an eating disorder, but it's taken years. So be patient with yourself. You're going to have years that are better. You're going to have years that are worse. But you really can, if you want to, you can recover from it. And you will. You got this.
Yeah, you can do anything you set your mind to. And, you know, we live in a world now with people like Lizzo and people like Rihanna and people like Adele. And I mean, I'm only saying women, people like Harry Styles. People who are completely unapologetically owning who they are, owning their life choices, owning their style, owning their bodies, not asking for permission. And as much as I worry for the next generation, I also am so happy for them that they have all of this beautiful representation in the media. Because honestly, when I was growing up, it was like Hillary Duff, Paris Hilton, like Lindsay Lohan. They were all stick thin models, essentially. And all I ever wanted was to be the next Hillary Duff. And I was like, well, if I'm going to be Hillary Duff, I can't be chubby. Like, there is no chubby Hillary Duff.
And one more thing to add. When you start just following your passions and doing the things you love, like for Sarah.
Podcasting.
Yeah, podcasting, but also dancing, as you know. And for me, I am a huge hiker, a really big outdoorsy person. And I do love being active. And then once I just reminded myself that my body is the reason I can do these things that I love, it really helps just being forgiving and with yourself and realizing, like, okay, it doesn't matter if I'm 5 pounds heavier today, my body is still allowing me to do the things that I love. So I love my body back for that. And also, if you're basing your whole happiness on the number on the scale, you're going to be struggling for your whole life, because that number, just even depending on your cycle and stuff like that, is just going to change so quickly. True. So if you wake up in the morning and if your mood can change as fast as the number on the scale can, and it can change really fast, then you're forever just going to be chasing this unhealthy number that mm-hmm. means nothing. Mm-hmm. So we just have to thank our bodies, because they do so much more for us than we realize.
And another final piece of advice on a lighter note is go watch the movie I Feel Pretty. I just spit all over the microphone. Go watch the movie I Feel Pretty with Amy Schumer. I don't think you've seen it yet, but
you told me about it.
I watched it like once in university and then once again when I was really sick a few weeks ago. And it's just such a great movie. But the message It got a bunch of controversial hate because nothing can get away scot-free these days. But it's just like about a girl who, it's all about how your success and your confidence has nothing to do with how you look on the outside. It's all about that presence that you radiate from the inside and
that fire.
And it's hilarious. It's hilarious. And I mean, it's not going to heal you in any way, but it could make you giggle and laugh. And it just opened up a few little folds in my brain that I wasn't thinking about. So I definitely recommend that movie if you're looking for something a bit lighthearted, but also something that maybe will get you thinking. You know, so many eating disordered movies are so cryptic and disturbing. And this one technically is about body dysmorphia, I guess, but it's lighthearted and it has a good message. But is there anything else you want to say, or should we wrap it?
I feel like that was good.
Yeah.
We can wrap it.
I'm drained.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
You're doing great.
We've had a heavy week of chatting, and I had a procedure today. I'm all good. It's just been a lot. I'm feeling pretty drained. So we'll wrap it up. And
today's my last day of being 27.
You said your age is supposed to be a secret.
Oh, you're gonna have to take it.
I'll
out.
Have to take it
okay,
out.
Yeah, Amanda, wait, just, I gotta say something else. Just beep it. Bleep it.
Oh yeah, I'll bleep it. Ooh.
Tomorrow is my day of birth.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Amanda's birthday is tomorrow, and I'm so excited. We're going to her place for homemade pierogies.
Yeah.
It'll be lovely. I'm gonna put Rebecca in, I think, just so I can really seal the deal. And we're going to have a great week celebrating Amanda, because she is truly a light and a force to be reckoned with on this planet. And my life would be so much worse without her in it. Truly the reason that I'm so happy and thriving in Victoria is because I'm with my gal pal every day. So everybody make sure to wish Amanda a happy birthday. I mean, by the time this episode comes out, her birthday belated. Will pass. So, but still wish her a happy belated. And in a few years, Amanda's not going to be a 20-something anymore. It's a bit crazy.
I kind of want to cry. Thanks, Sarah.
We should rename
Love you.
It. I don't know. Let us know what we should rename the podcast to.
Well, yes, cry about that, but mostly crying about the sweet things you said. So
30,
thank you.
Flirty, and thriving. Ooh. It's a bit long, but something like
Isn't
that.
Isn't that from 30, 13 going
Yeah,
on
it
30?
Is, yeah. Okay. Or like 30 and dirty.
Yes, there we go.
I don't know.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Okay. We love you guys. Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us. Blah, blah, blah. You know the whole deal. We're still trying to grow. We're still trying to spread our wings and fly. So any support you can show us, even if you just like share this episode with one person, it really does go a long way. And we would appreciate it so much. And be sure to follow us on Instagram. We're posting lots of content on there. Be kind to yourself. And you're beautiful no matter what they say, like Christina Aguilera said.
Thanks, guys. We love you. See you next week.
Bye. You're beautiful.